Now then, my final guest of the evening, who has snuck in. He snuck in unawares, and here he is in the studio. And what an absolute treat it is to have you. Now, I asked my producer earlier to call you.
Sure.
To find out how I pronounce your name.
Sure.
Because the spelling of your name, and I gather, Rushdie.
Yeah.
The spelling of your name is quite something, isn't it?
Yeah, and I generally get that feedback.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
And we've had an Evelyn who was our mum, who was talking about postnatal depression. She's from Dublin originally, and the spelling of her name, AOIBHLIN. That threw you for a loop, didn't it, Mally? Anyway, Rushdie Jazz, welcome to Cape Talk, and thank you so much for joining us at this rather unsociable hour.
Thank you for having me.
What an absolute treat. What an absolute treat. Now, Rushdie is a Cape Town musician, and he's using his own experience as a cancer survivor to help others. He's going to be talking to us just now about his own personal journey and how he's using his talents to help other people who are living with the illness. And his single, The Calling, is it available now? Tell us, it's called The Calling.
Yeah.
Where did the inspiration come? I spoke in the introduction about your own personal journey as a cancer survivor.
Right.
Is it directly linked to that?
Yeah, definitely.
Tell us a bit about that.
It's actually quite interesting. I actually started writing the song 13 years ago at music school.
Wow.
And I literally only finished the song about 7 months ago. You know, so I only started with the verse and the chorus and the melody. And it's so amazing how, you know, we sort of include and transcend to life's ebb and flows and ups and downs and the things that we go through in life. And then you end up with something really interesting like this, you know what I mean? So I always say that, you know, everything is in divine and perfect order right now. So the timing of the song and subsequent to my personal journey with health challenges and stuff like that, this is the birth child of that journey, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it a kind of catharsis for you, having gone through...
Somewhat, eh? Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And just talk a little bit about the diagnosis came in 2012, I understand. And how did that come about? Had you been feeling unwell? Obviously you've been feeling unwell,
sure,
presumably.
Sure.
But what prompted you to finally say, I need to go and seek medical help? And when you were finally told... it's cancer. How on earth did you deal with that lightning bolt?
Yeah. So, it's quite an interesting story because I'm a professional coach as well, and I'm so extremely passionate about personal development. And I like to think of myself as a fairly conscious individual, particularly where somatic awareness is concerned, and physiological awareness. And what I did was I did a lot of research. I found a bit of blood in my output. And I'm going to quote Anthony Robbins because he's one of my favorite gurus in the field of personal development. And he always says when it comes to health challenges, always get multiple combination perspectives or opinions. And so I did that subsequently. I went to go and see 4 different GPs. And because of my age, they all thought that it was piles.
Sure.
Understandably, you know, because I mean, statistically, those generalizations and blanket statements are made, you know, understandably.
Yeah.
And then I went to a 4th one, and even he thought subsequently that it was piles. And then they put me on a fiber supplement, you know, given the nature of piles, you know, and it never worked. And I went back, and then subsequent to that, he sent me for a scope, and then they discovered a lesion. And that's where... the rest of the journey unfolded. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. What was the time between you deciding to go and get checked out to actual diagnosis?
Probably about between 6 and 7 months. And
it's terrifying.
It's very terrifying because I've literally gotten feedback from some family members and friends that have lost loved ones that have experienced the same symptoms for like 3 years and haven't gone for checkups and stuff like that. And I would imagine it's also because it's particularly for men, you know, it's one of those taboo challenges, you know, like testicular cancer, prostate cancer, you know, and breast cancer, you know. So, I mean, so people don't generally speak about it given the nature of it, you know. And so I think that I didn't have issues with that. For me, it was just like, I want to get to the bottom of this, you know, and so,
Once you were given that diagnosis, what was your initial reaction? What were your thoughts? Were you quite pragmatic about, okay, this is now what I need to do in the treatment, or was it a kind of moment of massive life reflection for you? Did you go into a panic? What was your reaction?
I'll never forget that day. My mom was with me. We were we went to Constantiaberg for the results, and then they said that they have discovered a lesion and that it is cancerous. And he immediately gave us made contact with one of his colleagues, which was a surgeon by the name of Dr. Michael Elliott, who evidently is one of the prolific doctors in this field specifically. And yeah, I was sort of shell-shocked because then it seemed quite surreal, you know, to be told that, because you always hear that close to you, but you never hear that close to you.
Age were you when you were diagnosed?
I'm 39 now, and that was 2012, so I think 36 or 35,
sure.
And then we went to the surgeon, and he took my mom's hand. But we never forget, we left the hospital, and she shook my hand. She said, you know what, we're going to walk this journey together, you know what I mean? With God. And we went there, and he took our hands, and he was just like uber confident, and he was like, we're gonna fix this, you know. Sure. And I was like, yeah, very emotional for everybody, and
yeah.
But to hear somebody say that, you know what I mean, it was like, okay, you know. And then the rest unfolded from there. Three major surgeries later, 8 rounds of chemotherapy, ileostomy bag attached to the right side of my tummy. Yeah,
talk about that. I think it's so important, and you touched on it there, particularly for men. And I remember doing a show about 6 months ago where we talked about, in fact, we're talking about men's health tomorrow specifically, that men typically will not go to the doctor in the case of feeling unwell. Obviously, men do go to the doctor, but for quote unquote embarrassing illnesses.
Sure.
And living with first of all the nature of the cancer, you spoke about that, then living for how long did you have
8 months
living for 8 months with the bag.
Yeah.
so much it's still such a taboo thing, isn't it? And I think
totally.
For you to come out and talk about it freely is wonderful and incredible, and we need to talk about these things more, because there will be people out there listening now.
Yeah.
Who are living that absolute experience.
Yeah.
And just to hear you talking about it on radio.
Yeah.
And sitting here healthy.
Yeah,
today,
relatively speaking.
Yeah, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
Healthy today and sharing that story is so important. What was that like as an experience for you? What was the biggest challenge to overcome with that?
I think initially, from a pragmatic perspective, certainly the bag, adjusting to the bag, you know, because
yeah.
your whole plumbing system is completely different for 8 months, and then.
Were you embarrassed?
I think initially I was. Yeah, you know, human nature is always one step ahead of us.
Yeah.
So I think I definitely was a bit embarrassed. In fact, initially, I wasn't even able to sort of engage with it. You know, it was it took me like 3 months to get to that stage. My
yeah.
mom used to help me with it. You know, because I was like, okay, how do you do this? You know, I know how, but I don't know if I'm ready. You know, and she was very supportive. You know, and eventually, I started to do it on my own, and then it became like another ritual. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we adapt. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, it was very, very unpleasant in the beginning, and very surreal, and just very impractical, you know.
Yeah.
And getting sort of, what do you call it, cross burn and knee burn. You have to put a towel down because just everything's very different, you know what I mean? In fact, it was quite ironic because at that juncture, there was an amazing nurse that was involved in the surgery that was doing a thesis at the time on living with an ileostomy bag in the Muslim community.
How,
you know,
fascinating.
And how that is either received or not received, you know, in terms of the traditions and the rituals and going for prayer
yeah.
and mosque and stuff like that. And so that was very interesting to be a part of that process and
yeah.
exercise. Yeah.
Yeah. Were there things that you learned during your illness, things that you learned about yourself that you hadn't previously
right.
known?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think prior to this life-defining challenge, I used to be a bit of a yes man. You know, sort of, you know, the cliche of wanting to fill up everybody else's cup at the expense of your own cup, you know, while your cup runs empty.
Yeah.
And there's been a sort of radical shift in that in
right.
that space, you know. A lot more backbone, you know, a lot more assertive, a lot more uninhibited in terms of sharing my perspectives, my authentic perspectives and thoughts and opinions on certain things. Whereas before, I used to just be very sort of timid, you know, and like, And yeah, so I wouldn't change anything, you know, I wouldn't wish it upon anybody. But certainly, I always tell friends and family that if I ever were to write a book, it would definitely be called How Cancer Saved My Life, because the decisions I've made since, the actions that I've taken, the paradigm shifts just in how I'm showing up in the world, you know, subsequently, has just been very, very significant, you know.
Did you find that you were stronger than you thought you were?
Yeah, I think I did, yeah. Eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah. You're presumably, are you in remission?
Yeah.
You're in remission. Do you still, have to go for
checkups?
How often do you
have to? In fact, I have a checkup tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Best of luck. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Do you still carry fear with you, or do you go in knowing I beat this once? What's your attitude?
It's interesting, because I definitely carry fear, particularly around checkup time. So sort of it's floats away on the radar for a while, you know, then it's checkup time, then it comes back on the radar and you feel anxious. I generally do feel anxious about it. But I had this very profound insight a couple of weeks ago. I was driving home and I realized, you know, everybody speaks about, you know, fighting the battle, losing the battle, still busy with the battle, whatever it is. Mm. And I was, because I always tend to struggle with the mortality part of it, you know. I still do, you know, and I mean, everybody's in a process. But I've realized, you know, and that's what the song is about as well, is that I don't feel, for me personally, and I'm owning this perspective, that it's about fighting or winning a battle. I think that we all have a start date and a checkout date, and I think I've just been blessed with a bit more time to fulfill what I believe to be my sole purpose, you know what I mean? So I think that everybody gets called home, you know what I mean, when it's time to go, you know what I mean? So and then it was just profound. I was like driving, I was like, hey, where did that come from?
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, so I don't, for me, I don't think I won a battle or lost a battle or fighting a battle. I just think that, you know, when my purpose is fulfilled, I will check out like everybody else will, you know, so yeah.
Mm. Talk about how music has played a role, not only in this particular journey, but in your life in general.
Yeah, wow. Sure. Music has always been a fundamental part of who I am, apart from the personal coaching and the personal development stuff. That's my other passion, you know, but particularly using music as a medium for social change and transformation, because I think that we're living in a era at the moment where there is a gap for creatives and artists to build our capacity to hold both a commercial and a socially conscious perspective. You know, it doesn't have to be either or.
Mm.
If you go back to the 90s, a lot of it was very socially conscious, you know, and not that commercial.
Mm.
And now it's, the pendulum's kind of shifted, you know, and it's a bit more, lot more commercial. And I totally get the dynamics around that, you know. Mm. And I'm excited about the opportunity for us to come together as artists and be, do a socially conscious, create socially conscious material with commercial appeal, you know, and that's what my intention for this song, you know, create something that's commercial and that's something that when you sort of mucha dance, you know, that there's actually something profound, there's a profound insight and a message for you, you know. So yeah.
How difficult though is it to marry those two concepts?
It's challenging. I've always been perpetually fascinated by that challenge, you know. I love that challenge because of my love for personal development. So for me, it's like just trying to find that healthy medium, you know. I think there's enough place and space for everybody under the sun.
Mm.
There's enough place for love music, you know, makeup, breakup, Valentine's Day, Christmas, happy birthday. And there's a time and a place for some socially conscious stuff as well, you know. It doesn't necessarily have to be this binary perspective. It's either or, you know. I think it can be integrated, and I think that's something to get excited about, you know, or to be put off by. I get excited about the challenge, you know, so yeah.
Talk to us about some of the lyrics in The Calling.
Yeah. So like I said, I started writing the song 13 years ago, and the song is basically just to inspire us and myself to honor what we believe to be our sole purpose or our calling. You know, whether it's your something you've always wanted to be, you're passionate about, you know, whether you can do it in a full-time or part-time capacity, you know. Because the biggest thing that has stood out for me about that chapter of my life, the cancer journey, is that it's not how much time we have, it's ultimately how we choose to occupy our time. And so the intent behind the song was basically something to obviously get you moving, but also certainly something to get you thinking about what is it that, you know, why am I here, you know, what is the legacy I want to leave behind, you know, what type of impact do I want to make while I'm here, you know what I mean? And have fun in the process, you know what I mean? So, yeah, that was it, yeah.
You are the official live release, that hasn't yet happened.
The digital worldwide release is available as we speak.
So that's available, but you're still there's an event taking place at the Cornerstone Institute that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, no,
that hasn't happened. Yeah. Okay, so tell us more about this. First of all, tell us more about the Cornerstone Institute.
Sure.
And why you chose that venue.
Well, myself and the CEO of the Cornerstone Institute, Noel Daniels, and he has been a big fan of my music. He's always come to my shows in retrospect, and we also have a very, very similar resonance for personal development and particularly coaching. And he always said, we need to do something together, And eventually, I think about a year ago, I made contact with him, and we had some profound conversations, and today I'm officially the first brand ambassador for the Cornerstone Institute, and I'm really, really privileged and grateful for that because they've been around since 1975. So.
Wow. And tell us what they do.
So they basically try to create opportunities to make higher education more accessible on the Cape Flats for second generation, so,
okay.
Yeah. And I love that about them. So they are trying to identify, you know, those precious pearls in our communities that don't necessarily have the means financially, and then they subsequently try to find funds to support the growth and development of that generation.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. Fantastic. Yeah. And then the other organization that you're involved with is Aries Cancer Foundation, which for obvious reasons you're involved with. But tell us about some of the work that they do and why particularly. I mean, we know why, but that there's a million charity organizations, cancer organizations, but why that one?
Well, you know that the cliche that, you know, everybody on a fundamental level, we're all interconnected. You know? And so the CEO and founder of Aries Cancer Foundation used to be the ex-CEO of Cornerstone.
Right, okay.
And so he and Noel are very good friends. And when I told Noel, and everybody knows generally that supports my music, that all of my shows have a cause attached to it. You know, it's just representative of who I am. So all my shows, it's been 16 Days of Activism, it's Cupcakes for Kids with Cancer. This time it's the release of my song, which is inspired by my journey. And Ari's story is really profound. And Alan Jansen, who is the founder of Ari's Cancer Foundation, lost his daughter, Ariana, to cancer. She had a brain tumor, I think, a good couple of years ago. And they created this foundation to basically support young people with facing the challenge and the transition of them being at the Red Cross Children's Hospital. And very often you'll find that there's not enough space there sometimes, and then they have to transition over to another hospital like Groote Schuur, but to ensure that they get exactly the same support and quality support that they would have gotten there, you know. So that's one of the motives behind the existence, you know, amongst a lot of other things, and to keep her legacy alive as well, you know, I would imagine. Yeah. So
indeed, I mean, both incredible charities and worthy charities, indeed. I just wanted to ask you how much, or did you, while you were going through your cancer treatment, did you speak with other people who also had cancer? Was that, we hear so much more these days, particularly about that idea of relating to or having our experiences heard, having somebody witness, can actually be of such huge benefit. Of course, we need to have medical treatment, etc. But from a personal, spiritual, emotional level, having that connection, was that something that you experienced, and is it something that you do today? Do you speak with people?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one name particularly comes to mind is a very, very close friend of mine, Lance Dietrich, and I was introduced to him while I was in hospital at Kingsbury, and he had gone through exactly the same process and journey about 3-4 months prior to me. So every step of the way he was sharing with me, you know, what's coming, you know, and what it's going to be like, you know. And so I was so privileged to have that, you know. And and we pretty close friends even up until today, you know. And then, yeah, I definitely think that try to stay away from Google, you know, because I realize everything has golden shadow And so the goal is that there are beautiful and inspiring stories over there. And then the shadowy aspect is that you can, how deep down that rabbit hole do you want to go? Because there's a lot of statistical stuff that can really scare you, you know what I mean? And the mind is such a fragile thing, particularly the subconscious mind, you know what I mean? So you do want to be mindful of that and just really try to consciously surround yourself with those beautiful, inspirational stories. And they are in abundance, you know, there are many of them. Yeah.
And yours is one of them. And I thank you so much for coming in this morning. It really has been such a pleasure. And I'd love to get you back to talk about your coaching work. I think that would just be an absolutely fascinating discussion. Rishin, thank you again for coming in. And the single is called The Calling. It's out on all digital platforms. If people want to get involved, just quickly, if people do want to get involved with either Aries Foundation or the Cornerstone Institute, you can go to the website, www.cornerstone.ac.za, and www.ariescancerfoundation.org. Your website is...
just drishtinjazz.com. So it's just R-O-E-S-H-D-I-E-N.
There it is.
J-A-Z-1-Z.com. And tickets available at CompuTickets. So,
and just give us the date.
It's the 5th of May. It's a Friday evening at the Cornerstone Institute in Salt River.
I cannot think of a better way to spend the 5th of May or a Friday night for that matter. So tickets available at CompuTicket. Do get them now.